This is a disclaimer for you, the listener. This podcast comes with darkness, gruesome, bizarre, and downright weird stories. You've been warned.
Welcome to Under the Stairs.
Hey, hello.
A podcast that is brimming with gruesome true crime events.
Oh my god.
Paranormal encounters and more weird, wonderful and bizarre things that the world will bring. Hello and welcome back to Under the Stairs. I really do appreciate you guys being here. It's been an absolute pleasure recording these episodes for you guys. Now today I have got one of the most disturbing episodes to date right up my sleeve. And I came across this the other day while I was streaming on Dead by Daylight with my beautiful community. Now, it is all about an Australian lady. And to put it completely plain for you guys, she is probably the craziest psychotic woman I have ever read about in my life so far. And I have read about a lot of crazy people during my time under the stairs doing this podcast. So, without any further ado, it's time me and you got in to the dark case of Catherine Mary Knight. Catherine Mary Knight was born on the 24th of October in 1955. She was the first Australian woman to be sentenced to life imprisonment without parole. She was convicted of murdering her partner, John Price, in October 2001. And she is currently detained in Silverwater Women's Correctional Centre. Originally from the town of Aberdeen in New South Wales, Hunter Valley, Barbara Ruffin was forced to move to Moree after beginning a relationship with Ken Knight, a co-worker of her husband, Jack Ruffin. The Ruffin and the Knight families were both well known in the conservative rural town, and the affair was a major scandal. Two of Ruffian's four children remained with their father, while two of the youngest were sent to live with an aunt in Sydney. Catherine Knight was the younger of twins born to Barbara on the 24th of October 1955 in New South Wales. Jack Ruffian died in 1959, and the two children who lived with him moved in with the Knight family. Barbara's grandmother was apparently an Indigenous Australian from the Moree area who had married an Irishman. She was proud of the fact and liked to think of her own family as Aboriginal. This was kept a family secret, as there was considerable racism in the area at the time, and this was a source of tension for the children. Apart from her twin, the only person Knight was close to was her uncle Oscar Knight, who was a champion horseman. She was devastated when he committed suicide in 1969. And continues to maintain that his ghost visits her. The family moved back to Aberdeen the same year. In Knight's earlier life, her father Ken was an alcoholic who openly used violence and intimidation to rape her mother up to 10 times a day. Barbara, in turn, often told her daughters intimate details of her sex life and how much she hated sex with men. This later, when Knight complained to her mother that one of her partners wanted to take part in a sex act, she didn't want to, but Barbara told her to put up with it and stop complaining. Knight claims that she was frequently sexually abused by several members of her family, although not by her father, which continued until she was 11. Although they have minor doubts about the details, psychiatrists accept her claim, as all her family members confirmed the abuse did happen. In 1973, Catherine met hard-drinking co-worker David Collette, and she completely dominated him. If he was to be in a fist fight, she'd be there to back him up, without fail, using her fists. In Aberdeen, she was renowned for offering armed combat to anyone who upset her. Knight married David in 1974, at her request, with the couple arriving at the service on her motorcycle, with a very intoxicated David. As soon as they arrived, Knight's mother, Barbara, gave David some advice. In quotations, this is what she said. "The old girl said to me, 'Watch out. You better watch this one. She'll fucking kill you. Stir her up the wrong way or do something wrong and you're fucked. Don't ever think of playing with her. She'll fucking kill you.'" And that was her mother talking. "She told me she's got something loose. She's got a screw loose somewhere." On their wedding night, she tried to strangle him. Knight explained that it's because he fell asleep after only having intercourse 3 times. The marriage was particularly violent, and on one occasion, a heavily pregnant Knight burned all of David's clothes and shoes before hitting him across the back of the head with a frying pan. Simply because he arrived home late from a darts competition after making the finals. In fear for his life, David fled before collapsing in a neighbour's house, and he was later treated for a badly fractured skull. Police wanted to charge her, but Knight was now on her best behaviour and talked David into dropping the charges. In May 1976, shortly after the birth of their first child, Melissa Ann, David left for another woman and moved to Queensland, apparently unable to cope with Knight's possessive and violent behaviour. The next day, Knight was seen pushing her new baby in a pram down the main street, violently throwing the pram from side to side. Knight was admitted to St. Almo's Hospital in Tamworth, where she was diagnosed with postnatal depression and spent several weeks recovering. After being released, Knight placed 2-month-old Melissa on a railway line shortly before the train was due. She then stole an axe, went into town and threatened to kill several people. A man known in the district as Old Ted was forging near the railway line and found and rescued Melissa, by all accounts, only minutes before the train passed. Knight was arrested and again taken to St. Almo's Hospital, but apparently recovered, signed herself out the following day. Only a few days later, Knight slashed the face of a woman with one of her knives and demanded she drove her to Queensland to find David. The woman escaped after stopping at a service station, but by the time police arrived, Knight had taken a little boy hostage and was threatening him with a knife. She was disarmed when police attacked her with brooms, and she was admitted to yet another psychiatric hospital. Knight told nurses that she intended to kill the mechanic at the service station only because he repaired David's car, which allowed him to leave, and then kill both her husband and his mother when she arrived in Queensland. When police informed David of the incident, he left his girlfriend, and along with his mother, they both moved to Aberdeen to support her. Knight was released on the 9th of August 1976 into the care of her mother-in-law, and along with David, they now moved to Woodridge, a suburb of Brisbane, where she obtained a job at a meatworks in nearby Ipswich. On 6th of March 1980, they had another daughter, Natasha. In 1984, Knight left David and moved in, first with her parents in Aberdeen, and then she moved out and went into a rented house in nearby Muswellbrook. Although she returned to work, she injured her back the following year and went on a disability pension. She no longer needed to rent accommodation close to work, and the government gave her a housing commission house in Aberdeen. Knight met 38-year-old miner David Saunders in 1986. He moved in with her and her two daughters, although he did keep his old apartment, which Knight grew jealous of in regarding of what he did when she was not around, and he would move back in there when she became too violent towards him, but she would soon beg him to return. In May 1987, she cut the throat of his two-month-old dingo pup in front of him, for no more reason than to use it as an example of what would happen if he ever had an affair, before going on to knock him unconscious with a frying pan. She sounds like a complete, utter psychopath. I've got to be honest. Absolutely fucking crazy. In June 1988, she gave birth to her third daughter, Sarah, which prompted Saunders to put a deposit on a house, which Knight paid off with her workers' compensation when it came through in 1988. Knight decorated the house throughout with animal skins, skulls, horns, rusty animal traps, leather jackets, old boots, machetes, rakes and pitchforks. No space, including the ceilings, were left uncovered. After an argument, she hit Saunders in the face with an iron, before stabbing him in the stomach with a pair of scissors. He soon moved back to his apartment, but when he later returned home, found she had cut up all his clothes. Saunders took long service leave and went into hiding. Knight tried to find him, but no one admitted knowing where he was. Several months later, he returned to see his daughter and found that Knight had gone to the police and told them that she was afraid of him. They issued her her apprehended violence order against him. There were no other word or sightings from David from this. Seems to me David escaped with his life. In 1990, Knight became pregnant by 43-year-old John Chillingworth and gave birth the following year to a boy they named Eric. Their relationship lasted 3 years before she left him for another man who she'd been having an affair with, John Pricey. John Pricey Price was the father of three children when Knight had an affair with him. He was known for being a terrific bloke and liked by everyone who knew him. His own marriage ended in 1988, while his two-year-old daughter had remained with his former wife. The two older children lived with him. Price was well aware of Knight's violent reputation, and she moved in his house in 1995. His children liked her, and he was making a lot of money in the local mines. Apart from the violent arguments, at first, life was a bunch of roses. In 1988, they had a fight over Price's refusal to marry her, and in retaliation, Knight videotaped items he had stolen from work and sent the tape to his boss. Although the items were out-of-date medical kits that he had scavenged from the company's rubbish tip, Price was fired from the job he had held for 17 years. The same day, he kicked her out, and she returned to her own home while news of what she had done spread throughout the town. A few months later, Price restarted the relationship, although he now refused to allow her to move in with him. The fighting became even more frequent, and most of his friends would no longer have anything to do with him while they remained together. And now we get to February 2000. A series of assaults on Price accumulated, with Knight stabbing Price in the chest. Finally fed up, he kicked her out, and on the 29th of February, he stopped by a local court on his way to work and took out a restraining order to keep her away from both him and his children. That afternoon, Price told his co-workers that if he did not come to work the next day, it would be because Knight had killed him. They pleaded with him not to go home, but he told them he believed she would kill his children if he did not. Price arrived home to find that Knight, although not there herself, had sent the children away for a sleepover at a friend's house. He then spent the evening with his neighbours before going to bed at 11 p.m. Earlier that day, Knight had brought new black lingerie and had videotaped all her children while making comments, which since have been interpreted as a crude will. Knight later arrived at Price's house while he was sleeping and sat watching TV for a few minutes before having a shower. She then woke Price and they had sex. After then, he fell asleep. At 6 a.m. the next morning, the neighbour became concerned that Price's car was still in the driveway, and when Price did not arrive at work, his employer sent a worker to see what was wrong. Both the neighbour and the worker tried knocking on Price's bedroom window to wake him up, but after noticing blood on the front door, they alerted the police, who arrived at 8 a.m. Breaking down the back door, the police found his body. She had stabbed Price with a butcher's knife while he was asleep. According to the blood evidence, he woke and tried to turn the light on before attempting to escape while Knight chased him through the house. He managed to open the front door and get outside, but he either stumbled back inside or was dragged back into the hallway, where he finally died after bleeding out. Later, Knight went to Aberdeen and drew $1,000 from Price's account. Price's autopsy revealed that he had been stabbed 37 times in both the front and back of his body, with many of the wounds extending into vital organs. Several hours after Price had died, Knight skinned him and hung his skin from a meat hook off the door in the lounge room. She then decapitated him and cooked parts of his body, serving up the meat with baked potato, pumpkin cabbage, yellow squash and gravy in two settings at the dinner table. Along with notes beside each plate, each having the name of one of Price's children on it. She was preparing to serve his body parts to his children. A third meal was thrown on the back lawn for unknown reasons. This was speculated that Knight had attempted to eat it but couldn't, and it's been put forward in support that her claim that she had no memory of the crime. Price's head was found in a pot of vegetables, and the pot was still warm, estimated to be between 40 and 50 degrees Celsius. This indicated the cooking took place in the early morning. Sometime later, Knight arranged the body with the left arm draped over an empty 1.25 litre soft drink with the legs crossed. Knight had left a handwritten note on top of a photograph of Price. Blood stained and covered in small pieces of flesh, the note said,
"Time got you back, Jonathan, for raping my daughter. You too, Beck, for Ross, for little John. Now play with little John's dick, John Price. Sick."
The accusations in the note were found to be groundless. On the 8th of November, Justice O'Keefe pointed out that the nature of the crime and Knight's lack of remorse required a severe penalty. He sentenced her to life imprisonment, refused to fix a non-parole period, and ordered her papers be marked never to be released. The first time that this has ever happened to a woman in Australia. And that is it for this episode. It has been a complete disturbing roller coaster, but it's been a magical journey with you guys. Now, I thank you guys for listening. I also ask if you can share this podcast, give it a like, give it some stars. I would appreciate that massively. Now, guys, I will see you again under the stairs.